Hello and welcome to season 3 of the Nicola Paul Approach. It's going to be my privilege to open up the door to this wonderful world for you all. I would love it if you could take the time to rate, review, subscribe and follow my podcast. It will help others to find my channel so we can grow our like-minded nation. All of the details for my website and social media platforms are in the show notes. So let's begin this week's episode. Welcome back, my lovely listeners, for another absolutely inspiring guest appearance I've got this week with a lady that is totally inspired me, actually, by reading her story, having a look on all of her loads of different platforms that she's on all the social platforms. And I just want to do a bit of an intro for this lady because she is just amazing. So she was born in South Wales, United Kingdom. She's the youngest of three sisters and was immersed in music from an early age. She actually entered in her first talent contest aged 6, singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Love that song. However, this has also marked the beginning of her love of music and performance, and inspired by such a musical upbringing, I just cannot wait to also hear all about that side of her life. But also, Amy has experienced some rare medical conditions in her early years. And, you know, if she feels comfortable enough, she can share with whichever parts of that she would like. So without further ado, let's welcome Amy to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so, so super excited to begin with who Amy is. You know, you can go as far back as you wish with your story, whether it's your personal or your business, it's entirely up to you. This episode is over to you. So, Amy, where would you like to begin?
I think I'd like to begin of actually who I am, because I've only really just discovered that. So I guess I'm a person who is just really passionate about all things voice, to expressing how you feel and being authentic to who you are, and just really, you know, resonating with the people around you and recognizing the people who you don't resonate with, because that's even harder to do and harder to actually put into action. Yeah. So I guess that is who I am, just somebody who just loves the voice, and I love helping people and just helping them. Yeah. So that is who I am.
let's sort of go on to the voice side of you, you know. Yeah. So it started when you was really young, that you found your voice, right?
Well, I found the musical part of my voice.
The musical part. Okay. Right. So describe that then. Yeah. Let's listen to what that exactly means to people.
Yeah. What that means. Well, I've got two older sisters, and we're all very musical, and my family is quite musical. So that's all I remember. Like, we used to have a Volvo. We sit in the back of the Volvo, and you didn't have to have seatbelts back then. And we would just sing. And that's kind of like my first memories of the music, I guess, and dancing around to like the record player on vinyl.
Love vinyl. Love it.
I know. I just remembered like Dirty Dancing, you know, the soundtrack.
Yes.
To Dirty Dancing.
Love that.
I know. So that's kind of like the first kind of memories I have of being musical. And then I guess the part where I said, obviously, you put in the biography, I did my first talent competition at the age of 6. And it was because my oldest sister entered me and my other sister into the contest, and that was the first time I was in the newspaper as well, because I was quite short. And what happened was the girl before me was older, so the microphone stand was high. Right. And obviously, being 6, I didn't know how to put the mic down, so it looked like I was really short, and that made the paper. So sure. Whatever.
You know. But thing is as well, is it's just your outlook on any part of what you've just said there, you know. It's just so, I don't know, it's pretty out there. And that's what attracted me to you as well, is some people can, you know, sort of carry a, I don't know, a an emotion along the rest of their lives that is, you know, it can become, it can affect their way of how they live. But for you, your attitude is just so positive and uplifting. I just really, you know, I want you to, if you wouldn't mind, just sort of explain to the listeners that have, like, don't know you at this point, you know, what was your way of how you grew up with, obviously, what, you know, you were diagnosed with and everything, because it's entirely up to you how much you want to share with us.
Yeah, well, it was quite tough. So I had cataracts at the age of one. It was amazing in Wales. They had this incredible doctor and he managed to save a little bit of my eyesight. But from then I had to wear these really thick glasses, you know, and it had to be tied with string because it kept falling off. And then at the age of four, I was diagnosed with a rare medical disorder called sensory neuropathy type 2, which means that I can't feel hot or cold anywhere in my body, as well as light touch. So I don't know if I've injured myself until it's bleeding or there's an infection. The only place I can feel, which I do thank God really, is that I can feel in my mouth. And so it could be, I could have had the type one, which meant I couldn't feel inside, inside my body and outside, but I was blessed to at least be able to feel inside. So I could feel a little bit of pain when, you know, stomach ache or, you know, things like that. But that also meant that part of that illness was to develop Charcot joints, which is the equivalent to osteoarthritis, which came into the forefront when I was a teenager because the doctors said that I should stop all exercise because they didn't realize what that advice was. Because they were looking at it from an older person perspective in their 60s, 70s kind of thing. But what that meant was, because I was actually quite active until that point, I was in my bike, I was running. And when they said that, I just, by the time I got to 12, 13, I couldn't move. I couldn't walk. Standing up was brutal. Going around the shops was really traumatic. So it was hard. It wasn't easy. But it also meant that I stopped growing because it affected my spine. So at the age of around 11, so then I was short, which added to the, oh, look at me, aren't I different kind of equation.
But you're unique in yourself, right? Because everybody is unique. I mean, obviously, you know, yours has come through an illness that is out of your control, right? I mean, I'm assuming that is it? Or and so you accept who you really are, you know, which is what you've done, right? You've accepted that.
Only now. It's been a process.
Sure. I can appreciate that. Yeah, because I feel that as you get older anyway, just everybody in general, as they get older with whatever it is that they're carrying with them as they get older, you're continuously learning anyway, aren't you? Like new parts of you, you know, and experiencing that. I mean, I did read on somewhere that I was reading about you and that you're into fairies and things like this. Now, I'm into angels. So I suppose it's the same thing, but a different way. You say yours a different way to me. But explain this, because I want to see if it is similar to what we sort of, how we, you know, in tune our energy.
Well, I do believe in angels. I mean, the fairy thing was just a little bit of a lighthearted approach to say that I'm quite a lighthearted person kind of thing. But I do believe it, you know, in the whole Peter Pan. And I love magic. And I think there's forces that we don't know about that help us every day. We just need to ask for it. So in my end of my biography, I said keep clapping because it is keep applauding yourself. Because I think that's very important, because we never give ourselves enough credit of what we've done. I mean, I never used to throughout my whole life. I always like put a lot of pressure on myself because nobody else did, because they made allowances. Like, you know, I've got so many disabilities. So I gave myself targets and goals. And when I didn't reach them, I used to get really depressed, but that was on me. And I never really appreciated anything that I did. And everyone kept on going, Amy, you've done so much. And I was like, no, I haven't. So I feel kind of not bad, but kind of, I didn't appreciate them for saying that at the time. And I look back and I go, yes, I did achieve so much from my start. I think I didn't accept how hardest start in life I actually had. So I felt, and society didn't help, going, oh, you're at this age, you need to be married with kids and a house. And I didn't have any of those things. And even at the age of 25, I was like, well, I don't have any of these things. Why don't I have them now?
Yes. Yeah. Because we all have to conform in boxes, right? That's what we're told a lot of the time, you know, from outside it influences. And, you know, whether it's on media or through your family or a friend or somebody's always there sort of saying, you know, well, not everybody, but some people are there reminding us like, well, why aren't you in this box at a certain age? Or why haven't you done this by a certain age? And it's like, because every single person is unique and different in their own way, and they will grow at a different speed to the next person. Oh my, absolutely, Amy. I am so into that. And but for me, like you, I only really started getting grasps of that a couple of years ago, maybe. And I'm 50 now. So it takes a lifetime. That's what I say with growing with us is as our selves. It takes a lifetime. But that's good though, right? If you're continuously finding new parts of you through all of your life, how great is that though?
Absolutely. And that's why you can't compare yourself to anyone else, and which we like to do. And again, that just that hinders our progress because we're looking at all these obstacles why we haven't done these things, as you said, by a certain amount of time by the age that you are. And that's just it's just I can't think of the word now, but it's just the wrong way to go about living your life, I think.
For you. Definitely. I'm going to go back onto the music voice thing, because this really intrigues me as well. And I know it's a big passion of yours that you've made into a career, right? You have now made this into a career. And I was on your website, and just to let the listeners know, all of Amy's contact details are going to be in the show notes of this episode. She has got loads of channels to have a good old binge watch and listen to, trust me, because I've been doing it the last couple of days. But one of the ones that really interests me about you was your voiceovers, right?
Right. And I only came to that 2 years ago, towards the end of 2019. I know.
Yeah. How did this come about?
Well, you know, again, I think everything in the past kind of comes, you know, in full circle of where you are right now. So it all began with the singing. I mean, I had a lot of vocal training. I classically trained, and then I went on to study jazz. So I did a few different voices when I was singing, and I didn't even realize that I was doing that, in all honesty. And then I wrote my own music, and I put it out there on iTunes and Amazon, and I was on BBC Radio, BBC Wales. And so, and then I was interviewed, and people would say, oh, you've got a really nice voice, and would you record links for us on radio stations? I was like, okay, yeah. But it never occurred to me to do something with my voice. I went into presenting, but that was about somebody else. That was about interviewing other people. It wasn't about me and my voice. So, but then what happened was, I think about 2017, 2018, I'd written my duet. So I was kind of ticking things that I wanted to do off the box. I'd always wanted to write a duet, which I did as a country rock single. So I put it out there.
Perfect.
Yeah, I know. But then it was all about the next thing that you're going to do. And it was getting a bit much and exhausting. And, you know, with entertainment, nobody wants to pay what you're worth. It doesn't matter how much experience you have. They want to get the cheapest amount of money for the most amount of work. And I remember this one club, they wanted me to do like three sets of 45 minutes, and they wanted to give like 50 quid. And I was like, no, I can't do that. I'm not doing that. Oh, and they were like, oh, well, we found people who can. I was like, well, fine, get them to do that then.
Yeah,
exactly. So it was a little bit depressing, though, to constantly come up.
Of course. Exactly. Again, because that's it's the blocks, isn't it? It's people, you know, your worth, you know.
Yeah. And that was always hard for me, charging my worth. That was I think that's been a main thing in my life. I never really, you know.
Yeah. You're not on your own, honestly.
I know.
It's always spoke about. Anyone that I speak to, like business people, they always say that they struggle with that part of, you know, what they're worth for what they charge for their services.
And it's funny though, because you get a lot of money coaches, life coaches going, you need to charge what you're worth. And then when they ask about what do I charge and can I help them, they're just like, gosh, that's expensive.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh my God, you just said it.
Oh my goodness. So yeah. It's interesting though, because obviously you've got a deep connection to like the jazz side of music. Mm. So where's that come from? Where did that start?
I just always loved it since I was young. I mean, I remember watching musicals, Frank Sinatra, Fred Astaire. Oh. I just love Judy Garland.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I love all them.
Yeah. So it just seeped into my brain and I didn't know that they were jazz at the time, jazz mm-hmm. standards, mm-hmm. as you call them, until I guess I was older and I went to music college. But I think I loved the, I just loved the different kind of, layers that jazz music had. It wasn't simple. Pop is simple, and it got a bit boring. So even though I love singing it, it just didn't fulfill my mind. And when you're physically restricted, all you have is your mind. And I used to think a lot. I used to love sci-fis. I used to live on sci-fi dramas. I mean, Quantum Leap and The X-Files were just everything I loved when I was younger, growing up. I mean, I think the 80s was just brainwashing everyone to love science fiction.
Just literally. <Isn't it>? Yeah.
So much.
Actually, with jazz, it's literally, I mean, that is a unique genre in itself, jazz, isn't it? I mean,
not everyone likes it, you see, because it has all of those little different things going on, and you can't, it's not like a strict melody that you can relate to. When I was going, that's just too complicated.
Sure.
But I loved it. I just loved it.
You loved it.
Yeah.
So that was obviously your brain was, your brain patterns were just in tuned with that type of, that's like, anything you put your mind to with work or just your personal life sort of thing. You connect, obviously that was what connected to you. So, so then let's move on. So Inner Demons, what's this about? So you released a debut album. Is this the one, Sin With Love? A Sin With Love?
A Sin With Love. And I think a lot of people thought it was from the devil because they called it a sin, but it's not. It's my name, like Amy Sinha.
Okay, good. I like that. So, talk about this.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I never thought I could write songs. So I spent a lot of my 20s going, no, I'm not going to write songs. I can't do it. But again, I mean, you reach a certain level as a singer and that's all you're known for. And people don't really respect that. Mm-hmm. They go, oh, you're a singer. Well, anybody can do it because anybody has a voice. But you may not like the voice, but anybody can sing. So I was up against that. And again, it was just really hard. So I had people going, oh, we can write a song for you and things like that. And I thought, no, I don't want that. I want to write my own. So I sat down it was called Time. And that was my first song. And the thing with me is I give everything 100%. So I thought, why stop at one song? Well, I'm going to write an album. So in the matter of 3 weeks, I kind of wrote 9 songs. Okay, that's my album done.
What?
I know. I did. But the problem was, when I wrote these songs, I was obsessed with Facebook at that time. So these songs were kind of thoughts in my head that I would just put on my status updates.
Sure.
So it wasn't going to resonate with everyone. It wasn't commercial, but I wanted to get it out there. And I wasn't thinking about who these songs were going to appeal to, but I put it out there. And then society came into play going, all right, okay, you've got this album now. What are you going to do with it? So then I kind of forced myself to put it out there, even though I knew it wasn't going to be a hit. Don't get me wrong. I know some people loved it, but then it wasn't going to sell millions and millions, but that wasn't the point really, because then the fact that I'd actually written my own music raised the bar up. So it meant I wasn't just a singer. I was a songwriter. It doesn't matter if you like my songs or not.
Sure.
I have songs that I've written. So then people started to take more interest. And then I started to have, I had these professional photographs taken. And again, that puts you in a whole new light. I mean, I think people don't realize what photographs can actually do.
Oh, yes.
You look a certain way.
Yes.
And again, that did put me in a whole new area, I guess. And people started to take notice. And then I think, again, social media, Instagram, I put a song on Instagram, like 30 seconds, and I posted it onto my Facebook. And this guy from New York kind of took note, and he was had his own record label. So he's like, do you want to collaborate? So I was like, yeah, that's brilliant. And I'd always wanted to go to New York and things like that. So even though I hadn't been to New York, it was kind of like my little piece.
Oh, God, that's amazing. Breaking through over there in the States with our, with obviously with, you know, as English musicians, right, if you like. That's amazing. So what happened then?
So that was released. And again, people took more notice here than like all the newspapers. Sure. I always wanted to have my face on the front cover. My face was on the front cover of the whole of South Wales Evening Post on a Saturday edition. And I was in, it was funny because it was on the front cover. I had a little box picture saying like, I think something about New York Apple, Big Bite of the Big Apple or something. And then in the main section, it was this massive front page double spread. I'm small, and it was literally like me, life size pictures of me, and then talking about it, which was my dream, and it was really cool.
That's just like the best. That's amazing, Amy. Yeah, that is amazing. Cool. Oh my goodness, you're just so cool about it. I just think that, like you said, every time you like break the barrier of a milestone, it's up for massive celebrations. You do that, right, don't you, though, right?
And I'm just happy that my friends and family were like that, because for me, I was like, okay, I really wanted it, but I just couldn't, you know, when your emotions, you just can't. I think I blocked myself so much when I was younger to cope.
Yeah.
But the downside of that was I blocked myself to the positive stuff and the happy stuff. So yeah, I have struggled with showing my emotions over the years. And that came with it. So I'm just happy that, as I said, my family and friends were there to celebrate and make me.
Remind you.
Yeah. Remind me.
yeah, definitely. Oh, that's great. And it's great that you obviously, you know, we go back onto your personal side of your life, and that it's good that you've got, you know, the right support around you, especially when you're growing with it at the, you know, to the top of your game, you know, your personal game. You know, would you agree with me, Amy, that you do need the right people behind you to support you?
Absolutely. I mean, it's really important. And we go through life like, I don't know, and this false sense of who we are. And sometimes we tend to attract those kind of people, and they're very negative. And especially, I've gone through this obviously being female in the entertainment industry, especially in the jazz industry. Hard.
Yeah.
And as a singer, it's even harder because, again, they don't respect you. They don't think of you as a musician.
Yeah.
And then you're just there to look pretty, entertain. I felt like a geisha half the time. Oh. Unpaid, an unpaid one.
I was going to actually go on to that as well, a female artist in that industry. So can you sort of elaborate a little bit more, because a lot of my listeners are very much about we're coming into a movement here where women are just as equal as men, within any industry. But of course, there is still the lacking of that in some industries. So do you mind just sort of sharing your experience and perspective in the music industry? How was this, you know?
Yeah, it was difficult. It was difficult. And I began to see that when I went to music college.
Yeah.
Because it was mostly men and not that many women doing the course. And it was hard to make yourself become serious. Mm. Again, it was just like the thing with me is that I'm quite a girly girl. So I like to look a certain way when I'm out and I'm in front of people. I do like to look good, you know, and I don't see anything wrong with that.
No.
But for some reason in the jazz world, it wasn't the case. You just go out. I mean, you see men with just jeans and a top and they're there on stage where, you know, I'd make the effort. And I remember somebody saying to me, you don't look like a jazz singer. And I was like, what on earth is a jazz singer supposed to look like?
What are they meant to look like?
Yeah, it's one of those things. So it's very odd. I'm not gonna lie. So then it was again, so you got classical singers who really outdo themselves, really glam themselves up. And again, I'm not like that either. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of in between, like in the mid kind of section. So I guess I found that a bit tricky to navigate as well, the appearance side as well as the musician side. But
sure.
When we used to have this jazz club in Swansea, and it was amazing. We used to have an amazing jazz musicians used to come from Ronnie Scott's and all over the world, even America. To perform here. But again, I was just there to make conversation. I remember this one American guy, I was having my opinion and he just kind of patted me on the back. I was just like, right, okay. You know, and they just stopped talking. It's like, okay, you know, sort of to seek, thanks for your opinion. It's not really like, yeah, we're not really listening.
Yeah, that's enough now. Yes.
I know. I was just like, right, okay. So it's kind of a lot of things like that. And they'd make comments about the way I dressed and, you know, my body parts and kind of like, so I guess the Me Too movement. I mean, if I was to say a lot about what happened then, if I did take it seriously, you know, I could have said a lot of things about it. But because I knew that that's the way it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it passed a real line, then okay, yeah. But
sure.
Or even those little things, a little bit uncomfortable, but you took it on the chin and you moved on and you accepted that that's what men were like, I guess. I mean, I'm not saying it's right, but that was the way, you know, it was.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just sort of feel that, you know, it's becoming more highlighted the last few years, more so about the divide of male and female through, you know, certain movements that are out there at the moment, mainly online, of course. And and you just sort of I'm very fascinated with female entrepreneur business women that go out into these industries, whatever industry it is. And I'm just fascinated to see, you know, how they've experienced that from being a female.
But I think on the flip side, though, I think we've gone a bit too far now where you can't say anything without it being misinterpreted.
Yes.
And I hear a lot about that. And I feel sorry for a lot of men because sometimes, you know, we love compliments. It's good to raise people up and you're scared of even giving a compliment because it's taken in the wrong way. And and I think that's quite sad, you know, just
because back in, I mean, I was born, I'm a 70s baby, so back in them days, oh my goodness, the stuff that men done back then, if they did that now, you know, that they would be locked up. But back then, because I suppose we've just grown up in a different mindset, haven't we, when we you know, back in those days, and just sort of brushed a lot of it off effectively. Whereas now, you know, females are brushing it off and they're getting very, you know, sort of, I'm women's rights and all of this sort of stuff. So it's intriguing. Anyway, I don't want to ramble too much on about the male and the female population. But so this time has gone so quick, literally, Amy. but I would love to have you on again, though, in another episode later on, if you're up for that, because I feel that you've got so many, and I got this feeling that you've got another little something up your sleeves, haven't you? Like some more new bucket list projects going on and other things are going to be occurring, or are they?
I don't know. I think I've reached a point where I've kind of like things kind of tend to creep up on me. So the singing was right from the start, but then I went into presenting and that just came about because I wanted to get over my fear of talking to strange people. Yeah. And then the voiceovers came about because my sister happened to suggest it. So I kind of, I'm kind of more to kind of living every day, just doing what I'm doing and love what I'm doing. And then let's see what happens. So I really don't have nothing pre-planned.
Well, do you know what? That is sometimes when things happen, when you're not thinking of something next to do, you know, something new is going to come in. That means you're opening up your awareness to just bring new things into your life. Oh my God, I cannot. I'm so excited. So, I mean, even if it is that you're just going to chill for the rest of your life, let that be that, right? But all I'm saying is, all I'm saying is that I would love for you to come back on in another season later on in the year and just to touch base with you and see where you're at.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much.
Would you do that?
Yes,
amazing,
absolutely.
Amazing. Right, Amy, before we go, would you like to say goodbye to the listeners today?
Goodbye, listeners. Thank you for listening to me and my story. And please reach out. I mean, I love talking to everyone and hearing other people's perspectives on their lives and how they've, you know, gone through their life and their awareness. As you said, everyone comes to their realizations differently and at different ages. And it's never too late. You're never too old at all to learn, or never too young to learn anything.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Amy. What a beautiful soul you are. And like I said, all of Amy's contact details are going to be in the show notes. There's going to be loads of binge watching and listening with all of her socials, because I'm going to put all of the links in the show notes, to even if you want to just reach out to Amy as well. So for now, my lovely listeners, love and light. I do hope you have gained some further insight into this episode today and now have some takeaway positivity. I thank you for your time. Before we go, show some love for your favourite podcast by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. Please do share the podcast with your friends and family or anyone you know that could benefit from these episodes. You can listen to your favourite episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcast, Spotify, my podcast website, which is www.thenicolapaulapproach.com. Stay tuned for next Monday morning's episode. Love and light.